League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey, everybody. This is just like one of the most fun episodes I've had. Let's start that over. Blah, 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 blah. All right, ready, set, go. Okay. Hey, everybody. On this week's episode of Whiskey and Eat with your host, Christopher Hart, I sit down with the distillery manager of Brooklady, Alan Logan, and Erica. I've been an Isla fan. I've been preaching the good word of Pete for 5 years now, which is a long time in my whiskey journey. I've been a huge fan since the very beginning. Everyone has heard my story of how I started with Laphroaig, and I'm sure I've mentioned my wife and I's trip to Isla a few years ago. It's just one of my absolute favorite parts of this whiskey journey is the peated realm of deliciousness that is Isla whiskey. And just being able to sit down with you guys has been an absolute blast. So we sit down, we talk everything that Brooklady's been doing. I mean, they are the progressive Hebridean distillery on Isla. I got it right the first time. You guys have been doing and experimenting, I mean, with every possible scenario when it comes to whiskey. So this episode was a complete nerd out for me. I was extremely honored to have you both here, and it was just amazing. So this episode is sponsored by Brooklady, but every word I'm saying is absolute truth. I mean, I've been talking about you guys for a long time. So I think that's pretty much everything. Yeah, absolutely. What's that? Oh, yeah. I never mentioned this. Make sure we get a photo together. Every episode of Whiskey Neat can be found on Facebook, which is our number one platform, as well as iTunes, Google Play, the whole nine yards. So you can visit our website at mywhiskeyneat.com. You can visit us on Twitter at mywhiskeyneat. People say, why my whiskey neat? Because I like my whiskey neat, right? I like this clean, fresh, and straight from the barrel. And we talk about that. Brooklady, non-chill filtered, higher proof, just boom, a raw product. So huge fan, and this is a fun episode. Thank you guys for being
Thank
here.
You,
and well, we're going to cheers for the fifth time, but I'm happy for it. Cheers, guys. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, thanks
Thank
for having
you.
Us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having
Erica,
us. Absolutely. No,
pleasure
I appreciate it.
Here, yeah.
I'm super honored, and you, the distillery manager for Brooklady, it's a big title.
Yeah.
And I think we're the same age.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 38.
Oh, okay. I remember reading that you had took over when you were – so we're not the same age.
Yeah.
I'm a little younger.
Oh,
but
okay.
I remember hearing that you took over when you were 28 or 29.
Yeah, that's right. But I took over the role as distillery manager when I was 20 – just 20, turned 28, yeah.
Absolutely
so, yeah,
incredible.
That's almost 10 years. It's hard to believe, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, it's I've worked at Brooklady for almost 18 years now. So when it reopened in 2001 – I was fortunate enough to start my career off in the industry at the age of 19 in the distillery, and I grew up on Isla. I was born on the island, and my family had been working in the whiskey industry for a couple of generations before me.
Eilach, right?
And Eilach,
yeah.
Born and bred, yeah.
That's my American pronunciation.
Yeah.
That's what they call natives of
Isla.
Yeah. And my father worked at Laphroaig. He was a distiller at Laphroaig. And we actually lived at the distillery when I was growing up. So being in the industry and being around the industry when I was growing up as a kid, and really, you know, Isla, everybody, my uncles, my brother even got into the industry, and I knew when I left school, that's what I wanted to do. And I was lucky enough to get a start at Brooklady, and I've been there ever since.
My love for Isla goes back, like I said, from the very beginning. I wanted to name, I have four kids, and the youngest daughter, I have a tremendous Scotch and Irish history. I wanted to name her Isla.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
We know a couple Islas.
Yeah, and the moment my wife realized that it was tied to whiskey, she put the kibosh on it. Yeah. So,
Naturally. So we
went with Nora,
yeah, okay.
Which is also a nice older name. But I love the island. We spent a week there, a few days there, a few years back, we stayed in a cottage Port Ellen.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the place is just a serene, and it's pretty massive too. It's very small, but at the same time, getting from one end of the island to the other, it was just incredibly difficult because the taxi service, it was called Jennifer's taxi service, and it was really just Jennifer and her van. It was like Uber before Uber was a thing.
That's right, yeah.
Call them up.
And I think we invented Uber, I think.
In yeah.
You are the beginner.
Before it was called that, yeah. And when we tried to get to, we tried to go on tours and we couldn't get the taxi service to take us because she was on the other side of the island.
That's right, yeah.
So we had to walk. Yeah. And I was so glad we did because it was probably the most peaceful. The weather was perfect, right? 50 degrees, which for us is amazing. And it was just incredible, and it was one of the best experiences we've ever had in Scotland. And we spent a long time there, and we absolutely loved it. So
you had a heat wave this year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we were.
What's a heat wave?
Well, for us, it's probably about 70, between 70 and 80.
75 here.
Do you sweat? At 70 degrees, you sweat?
Oh, yeah. For us,
oh, Lord.
It's like.
Then this room must be like 1,000 degrees to you because it's hot in here.
So, yeah, we're burning up. This year's been an exceptional year where we've had a drought. We had almost 6 weeks of no rain, and, it was in the kind of 20s, mm-hmm. and centigrade, it was between 20 and 30. So that'll be between 70 and 80.
So getting into living there, you being an Eilic, an island native, if I'm still pronouncing that right.
Yep.
Am I to understand that there were no trees on the island, which is where peat came from, is mm-hmm. because they didn't have any firewood. They had to switch to an alternative. And then, of course, lo and behold, the island is full of beautiful, abundant peat. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah. So, there is trees now, but back probably 100, 200 years ago, there was very little trees. You're correct in saying that the peat is there. We're super rich in peat. The land is made up of peat, and they use that back in the 1700s and 1800s when they were starting making whiskey on Islay. They were using the peat as a source of fuel to dry the malted barley. So we're fortunate that even today, after 100, 200 years of still using peat, there's still lots of peat on the island that is harvested for using for drying the malted barley. And that, incidentally, is actually giving a flavour, that smoky character, to the whiskey when they're when they started using it, it wasn't intentionally to add flavour to the malt. It was actually just used as a source of fuel to dry the barley.
But a happy accident.
Yeah, happy accident.
It was Lochendahl Distillery, right? That was essentially doing that.
There was Lochendahl, was on the Rins, and there was also the other distilleries like Beaumont, mm-hmm. Lefroig. I think Beaumont is the oldest distillery on the island. It was built in the 1700s, and they were using peat right back then as well. And, today all the island distilleries are using peat in one way, shape, or form to dry their malted barley. So at Bruichladdich, we don't smoke all our barley. Bruichladdich is unpeated, so there's no peat used to dry the barley for Bruichladdich whiskies.
For those that, just to clarify here, there are a line that specifically say Bruichladdich in big, bold letters on the still on the canister, and that's a key indication that it's not peated.
Yeah.
That being said, you guys also hit the other end of the spectrum too.
Mm. That's right, yeah. So Porcharlic, which we're going to taste with you today, Chris, is are heavily peated. That's typically an Islay single malt that's really it's heavily peated, and then we have Auchtermore, which is the most heavily peated whiskey in the world.
Absolutely huge fan. Auchtermore is a big winner here.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
the group. I run a local group. I don't know if you're in that one. Are you in HBS? Mm-hmm. The mayhem that is HBS.
I usually
mute it. I just kind of check in when you see Bruichladdich show up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you. But
the
group that I help run here locally is, and I've said this 1,000 times, it's the largest single market group in the nation of, 4,000 members. We see about 60 to 80 new members a week, and it's just growing exponentially. And we do a lot of cask purchases where we will buy a barrel of something. And we've started branching out and doing non-bourbon, right? We've started doing scotch, rum. We're actually buying two casks of Armagnac. The group is just hungry to branch out a little bit. The one thing I've always been nervous about is doing a peated whiskey for the group to make sure that we can sell the whole thing, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, and there is a ton of interest in both Bruichladdich and Laphroaig.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, Signatory does their cask series where you can buy individual casks, but you can't really taste them beforehand. They just kind of send them to you. You pick off a menu. Bruichladdich is something that if you guys ever do a barrel program, please let me know. Because essentially, I mean, realistically, you're selling them by the dozens of cases as opposed to, you know.
Yeah.
And we, I think this year we're doing something like 30 barrels. So
well,
a big fat barrel of Islay Scotch sounds very enticing.
Yeah, well, I'll store that up here and I'll keep it in mind,
Have you guys ever considered doing a barrel program?
Yeah, so we did a barrel program from 2001 right up till 2010, 2011. And it was really when we reopened the distillery, we were a young independent business and we needed, we sold barrels and being honest, we were doing it as a source
as
of
a revenue.
And I think over that period, over that 10 years, we sold maybe about 3,000 barrels to, but we were selling it as new make spirit. So they were obviously buying it as new make and then having to age it in our bonds. Yeah. And then they could obviously bottle it. When, and they still, we still have their barrels sitting in our warehouses that they can draw off at any time. But yeah, it's something we've, we don't do it this time, you know. It's we've been very careful that trying to build the brand, and you know, if we start releasing barrels, that we'll suddenly lose the focus on our brand
and maybe your core brand,
core brand, and we're just in this infancy of trying to build the brand, and maybe sometime in the future when the brand's bigger and more people recognize it, then we will maybe open up programs like this. But at this stage, we don't want to suddenly start to distract from what we're trying to the message we're trying to send across, because it's taken a long time for us to build up our dream and our philosophy. And we want people to understand what we're doing. So
I'm pretty sure if you like go and tour the distillery and you just put your name on a cask, they'll be happy to just give it to you.
Well, we
sure
That's it.
Our first trip down there, we made it to the Port Allen side, and we want to hit the north and the Port Charlotte side. We just, I mean, the last couple of years of the way things have grown, we've been here, right? Yeah. And we're dying. So our first family vacation this year in 3 years will happen this year. And then we have plans to go back soon. So I try not to come off as too much of a sales pitch when I do these shows. I'm just a huge fan of Bruichladdich. And you guys, I'm so excited to try these. So let me get through this. But I definitely – tell me what's going on here besides the new packaging. Are you guys just doing the – like what's being released now?
Yeah.
That's
okay, so – yeah.
Okay.
So
they're two different ones.
Yeah. Well, I figured they were two different.
Yeah. So, yeah, so today we've got the Port Charlotte 10-year-old and we've got the Port Charlotte 2011 Islay Barley. And for the last 4 or 5 years that we've had Port Charlotte Scottish Barley as our main Port Charlotte SKU. And we've really been trying to build up the stocks because we only started making Port Charlotte in 2001 when we reopened the distillery. This was a new whiskey that we had. We decided to make a heavily peated whiskey in Bruichladdich.
How heavy?
So it's 40 parts per million. And we started distilling this for the very first time in 2001. And as I said, about 4 or 5 years ago, we launched the Port Charlotte Scottish Barley as an introduction of the Port Charlotte range to the market. But in the meantime, we've been building up the stocks. And we're now at a stage where we've got enough stocks to do a kind of global allocation of Port Charlotte as a 10-year-old. And we really want to you know, contend with the rest of the Islay whiskies, because, you know, we feel that we are with Buchladi, but we're more, the style of Buchladi whiskey is an unpeated. It's more in line with some of the Speyside whiskies because sure. they're unpeated. Whereas with Islay whiskies, you know, people know Arbeg, Laphroaig has been smoky and, you know.
Always really smoky, rich, yeah. right? They don't really have an
yeah,
unpeated.
So that's exactly what Buchcharlotte is. It's a heavily peated whiskey. It's 40 parts per million. It's the same phenol content as Laphroaig and Lagavulin. Oh. But we distill it in a way that we're distilling very slowly and trying to get a balance of the flavor. We're sacrificing some of the higher alcohols during the distillation to get a balanced smoky flavor that also speaks more of the distillery, but also has influence from the cask as well. And we're super proud of Buchcharlotte as a brand, and we're relaunching it now as a 10-year-old, as I said. The packaging, we've decided to repack and go for a dark green bottle. So Laphroaig Arbeg was recognised. So I think naturally people instinct when they see a dark green bottle, they know it's maybe, you know, heavily peated whiskey, and that's what we're why we decided to go for the dark green pack. And yeah, it's bottled at 50%, so we naturally leave it at higher ABV. It's non-chill filtered. Hence the reason it's higher strength, but also at 50%, we feel that it carries more of the oils. It's a better balance of flavor at 50%.
What I've always understood, and this may not be the whole story, or it may either be completely inaccurate or maybe just part of the story, but my understanding, a big part of a lot of whiskeys, controversially speaking, is the addition of E150A, caramel coloring.
Yeah.
And I've always been told that a lot of Islay distilleries try to avoid that, and what happens is the perception of the average consumer when they see a bottle on the shelf and they see a darker whiskey, they automatically assume a better product.
Yeah.
So by putting it in a green glass removes yeah. that, and I say ignorance merely out of not knowing any better, not out of yeah. disrespect, but by removing that hindrance,
yeah.
they can just take it based off the label, which they should, because the label itself is going to tell you all the important stuff, right?
Yeah.
So a bump in proof, non-chill filtered, all the, you know, sometimes an age statement, sometimes yeah. not. These are all things that are key indications of a little bit more effort put behind the expression as opposed to just throwing some caramel coloring in there. Not that yeah. there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
There are plenty of great, I had a 50-year-old whiskey that I'm sure you could guess that had the addition of E158, and it was yeah. still absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
But it's just this common misconception, because you're always, that's the biggest part of any brand building, is you're always fighting against ignorance.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And so the green bottle, traditionally a big part of Islay's history, Laphroaig, Lagavulin, Ardbeg, all green bottles. So you take it exactly for what it is, without any kind of preconceived guesses or assumptions beforehand.
Yeah.
And this nose, the other thing I wanted to say is the nose on this is absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it's,
so it's everything I want in a peated whiskey, is that yeah. the beautiful yeah. nose. This old expression is, yeah. I think it's fantastic.
It is.
But the nose on yes, this is yeah. just blowing me away.
Yeah, well, we've carefully selected, you know, as I said, we've saved up our stocks and to have enough to do a 10-year-old launch. But we've carefully selected the right balance of casks. We use 75% of American bourbon casks, and 25% of the casks that we've selected for the Buchcharlotte 10-year-old is French European wine casks, but with a few different chateaus in there. So we've got some fruit, mm-hmm. but some sweet wines as well, and just getting that balance of flavor. And it works well with the peat, you know, trying to get the sweets to integrate with the oak and the peat smoke as well. And we're finding with Buchcharlotte, it really, you know, adapts well with different aging profiles. You know, even in sherry, it comes through really well. We're quite excited. In a couple of months' time, we're going to release a Buchcharlotte cask edition, which has been matured. Well, finished off in 1 year in Mouton Rothschild casks, and it's very special. Yeah, it's got a real fruity, rich, you know, kind of cherry, rich fruit.
A lot of dark fruits.
Yeah, dark fruits.
Yeah,
and it's you know, Buchcharlotte, you know, even with it being heavily peated, it works really well with that fruit coming through on the palate and the nose as well.
Absolutely stunning, and I'm so excited. I mean, 40 parts per million. It's definitely, I think a lot of people. They assume sometimes that with a higher PPM, parts per million of peat, of phenolic mm. content, you assume a much more aggressive
yeah.
peat, but it's not always the case. I mean, there's a sweetness to this that's just and it's all ex-bourbon first fill?
Yeah, first fill.
I mean,
and I mean, there's a couple of elements that we do to try and balance it. And it starts right back at, we get malt at 40 parts per million. And the first stage of, we start to, is it the distillation, you know, where we're very mindful of the way that we distill. If we distill too aggressively, then we get a lot of the higher alcohols coming through and we get the high phenols. But we choose to sacrifice some of the phenols during distillation to try and tame it down a little bit to get more of the sweeter elements coming through of the malted barley that also help complement, you know, during the aging, you get that sweetness as well. So all the sweetness that you're tasting is not all just coming from the aging process. It's coming, some of it's coming from the malt, because I'm going to get a bit technical here and hopefully I don't get too carried away, but during the distillation, we will we distill slowly to get more effect from the copper pot still, more of the reflux. So it's purifying it, and that's sacrificing, you know, sacrificing some of the phenols during the distillation that is
making it less smoky.
It's making it lighter, lighter spirit and less smokier. And that then allows the flavors of the malt and the sweetness come through in the spirit. So it starts off there, and then obviously the aging process. We age all our barrels on Islay, so we do get subtle influences coming from the maritime influence, because our warehouses are literally a stone throw away from the sea. Mm-hmm. We're Islay's located on the edge of the Atlantic Ocean, so we get, you know, we're windswept by the Atlantic Ocean, and we get that salty spray coming across the warehouses. So we get that salty, tangy note that comes through in all our whiskies. So that influence is there, but the cask as well. It's obviously, you know, using bourbon casks, it gives an element of sweetness. So, and then using some of the French wine casks we get, we can get a balance of oak and some more sweetness coming from some of the sweet wines we use.
Yep. Is the traditional proof of the port shot line around 100 proof?
Yeah.
It's always been that way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's extremely bold. I mean, it's something that you know, traditionally, I mentioned this a few minutes ago, that a bump in proof is a traditionally, a lot of whiskeys, whether it's bourbon or scotch, will always cut something down to 80 proof, the minimum required, mm-hmm. because it maximizes profit. So the idea that a distillery puts something out that's not the minimum means that they are sacrificing financial interest for quality.
Quality,
And it's something that, you know, I'm sure you've heard of Ralphie, right?
Yeah.
So Ralphie was the first reviewer that I watched on YouTube when I was learning about scotch. I would listen to Ralphie incessantly. Yeah. And that's one of the things he says. So one of the three indicators that you can usually check for on a label right off the bat as a sign of, you know, before even tasting something, is a bump in proof, natural coloring. And what was the other one? Oh, it's been that long since I've listened to it. There's three.
Yeah.
It's a bump in proof.
Chill filtering.
That's right. So non-chill filtering, leaving all those natural oils in there, is something that it's just, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Like just did you hear that bump? Yeah. Sorry. Oops. Yeah. So, I'm still new with this, guys.
So we know Ralphie very well. He's Ralphie.
You ever met him?
Yeah. He came to the Whiskey Academy. So we ran a program. Again, back in maybe between 2005 and 2010, we ran a program where we done the Academy program that was allowing consumers, you know, interested whiskey enthusiasts to come to the distillery. They would work with us for a week and stay at the distillery, and they would learn a bit more in detail about, you know, what we were doing at the distillery and how we make our whiskey and, you know, the differences. And so Ralphie was, he came and we spent a week with him, and he came back and visited a few times. So yeah, I know Ralphie pretty well. I haven't seen him in a couple of years, but yeah. Just exactly as you say, I think the 50%, there's a couple of reasons that we bottle at 50%. Now, the non-chill filtration is the first element, that we don't chill filter any of our single malts. We believe that you age your whiskey for however many years, you know, in this instance, it's 10 years, the Port Charlotte's been in the cask. And during that 10 years, the whiskey's extracting all these flavors and oils and tannins from the oak. And that's what's carrying the flavor. And it's all it carries it through in the whiskey. Now, it's all held together. The molecules are held together. And we call them like the natural oils. It's commonly, that's what we'll say, the natural oils in the whiskey. And they're held together. Now, if you chill filter your whiskey, what you're doing is you're reducing the temperature of your whiskey before bottling, and you're extracting these oils to allow you to add more water to bring it down to 40%. Now, we have to compromise because we leave the oils in. So we can't go below 46%, because if what happens is when you dilute it down, when you add water and it comes down to below 46, there's a reaction between the oil and the water. And it starts to turn the whiskey hazy.
Highland haze or Highland mist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a ton of terms for it.
Yeah.
But essentially, it's cloudiness in the bottle.
Yeah, that's right.
It goes and again, going back to the average consumer, when you see a milky looking.
They think something's wrong with it.
Yeah, so, and it's not just the consumer, it's also liquor stores and distributors.
Putting ice in it or anything, people immediately think it's something.
So we choose not to do that. Mm-hmm. So naturally, we could bottle at 46% without taking the oils out. So we could bottle at 46, but we actually choose to go at 50% because we feel that the flavors are held together better at 50%.
Sure.
It's a better carrying of the flavors, and it's, you know, for us it leaves that oily texture, it gives that long finish on the whiskey. And if you were, you know, we could add more water, but then it would mean that the taste would be a little faster in the finish. So for us, yeah, we're sacrificing that. It's financially, you know, it's something we sacrifice, but again, for us, it's more about the quality, and we want people to have the experience. Now, we often say to people, if you try it at 50 and they feel it's still too strong, you know, add a little bit of water and soften it up. You know, don't, it's easier to add water, but you can't,
it's easier to go down.
Yeah,
yeah, I tell people all the time that there's you know, Country Time lemonade.
Yeah.
It's powdered lemonade.
Yeah.
I'd much rather buy that and add my own water than to buy pre-mixed and it'd be too weak.
Yes.
Because you can't go back.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't make it stronger once
it's done. I'm going to use that for every tasting.
Yeah. I'm telling you. Yeah. Speaking of that, how many tastings have you got? How long are you in town for?
Just today in Houston. We were in Dallas yesterday. He flew in the night before that.
Going nonstop?
Yep. Yeah. We're back to back. And
they're
then tomorrow,
like a dog.
Yeah. Tomorrow is Austin. And then we finish Austin Friday night at Whiskey X.
Yeah.
And then he heads off.
Back
after
to
that.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one thing I've learned is that the poor souls that have to travel around the world are run like Eddie Russell from Wild Turkey, Japan, Europe. I mean, just boom, boom, boom. And there's no and you're drinking the whole time too, right? Like,
right,
is this your first drink of the day?
No, we've had 3-4 whiskeys already.
Yeah,
and a cocktail.
We're doing well.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's you know, you work too much, and the day is much longer than you think. It's really not that hard to hit 2 or 3, and it's like, you know, 2 o'clock now, 3 o'clock.
In Isla, it's night, so go ahead.
Yeah, so it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah. So you're still shaking off the jet lag a little.
Yeah,
bit?
I'm okay. I'm getting in about 6-7 hour sleep. So I'm okay.
Six is nice. Oh man, we have a bunch of babies at home, so six is not an option.
Yeah,
you know, 6 hours would be phenomenal. Five's a lucky night. So
okay.
I want to try the next one, Isla Barley 2011. So
Sure.
I typically could try to stretch these out over a few segments, but this looks too good not to touch. So,
sorry, I didn't reopen it.
No, it's okay. It's okay. What's the reasonable shelf price we're looking for the Port Charlotte series?
We're coming in probably low 60s here.
That's nothing.
A couple dollars
over what
you're, you know, maybe getting, but for quality, I totally think it's great.
I had lunch with John Campbell of Laphroaig a few months back, and we had a discussion about bourbon, right? So for years, scotch was a rich man's game for a lot of Americans.
Yeah.
Just the idea that things are inherently more expensive because you have to deal with import tax and then, you know, another three-tier system to go through. So what happens if you want a good 12-year-old scotch, it's going to run you $70.
Yeah.
Right. Now, you go overseas and it's, you know, $40 or whatever, 40 euros.
Yeah.
But bourbon has become such a big boom, and they're capitalizing on the secondary market. Are you familiar with the secondary market?
No.
So there's a black market on Facebook
for,
and this is not news. I'm not going to be I'm not going to be breaking any news here. No one listens to this anyways. But there's European releases, yeah. stuff you can't get here in America, stuff you can only get in certain states, okay. some stuff you can only get in certain countries. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole world, and you're familiar with it, yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Facebook, where people will buy and sell and trade and ship and blah, blah, blah. And the problem is secondary groups cause secondary prices, mm-hmm. right? So if you want to get... If you want to get something you can't get,
okay, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you're going to pay a premium for it.
Yeah, sure.
And a lot of these distilleries, American distilleries, have been are well aware of these groups okay. and will actually gauge pricing for releases based okay. off.
Yeah.
So there are some distilleries releasing a 10-year-old whiskey for $140
right,
or $150.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Some of them are completely non-age-stated whiskeys yeah, okay. with very young stuff. It's completely illegal, but yeah. the distillers are using it as like a marketing focus to kind of gauge. And there was a point to this, I promise. But, Scotch has stayed consistent,
yeah.
right? So
yeah.
The fact that you can now get a quality, 100-proof, non-chill filtered, awesome, you know, whiskey, scotch
yeah.
for $60, little sixties
yeah.
is
yep.
phenomenal.
Yep.
I mean, not to knock any other Isla distillers, but there are some no age stated whiskeys that,
yep.
that start off at 120.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Sure.
So, it's nice to just
yeah.
have a great peat bomb,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely,
for a reasonable
yeah.
price.
Yeah.
And then of course you've got now have this gorgeous packaging, which will look great on the back bar. I don't care who's, I know Reserve 101 is a huge Scotch bar here
they
in
are.
Houston. So have yeah. you guys visited there yet?
He has
not been,
yeah.
but I go there quite a bit.
What are y'all doing after this?
We are going to B&B Butcher.
Yeah, great stop.
Yep.
Tell Jeremiah said hi.
I will for sure. He is going to probably pick Alan's brain until he's sideways, I'm sure. But
Jeremiah is incredibly intelligent.
We love him, though.
Yeah, he's
yeah.
a great guy.
And then we're off to UB Preserve after that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard of Chris Stewart.
Yep.
I've heard of Underbelly. And I've had 2/3 of the Houston Bourbon Consortium on here.
Yeah.
Sure. Kevin, I always forget if it's Flood or Floyd. Kevin Floyd and Morgan Weber. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I want to get Chris Stewart in here. He's a bit of a celebrity, so it's like, well, you know, you want to come hang out and record in my little studio here,
yeah.
you know? So, but there's this incredible blossoming whiskey scene here that
yeah.
is just for years, the focus has always been bars.
Yeah.
And now it goes way beyond that.
Yeah.
It's incredible
yeah.
here. And just to be able to sit down and talk to you
yeah.
on this little show is yeah. like a huge honor for me. Yeah. So I really appreciate it. And I'm, again, going back to my first love of whiskey was Isla Whiskeys. This is just incredible. So
yeah.
I'm going to give you a quick cheers
absolutely.
Here.
Cheers, cheers.
Absolutely.
Cheers
to you. Absolutely.
Yeah. I know my wife's going to love this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the distinct, unique things that about the new pack is that we've went for a wider neck in the cork, and it gives a really loud pop.
It's good. It's important
yeah.
aesthetic.
Yeah, yeah, that's
going
right.
Going back to – yeah. let's get – are we recording? Yeah, yeah. So going back to the whole there's all these things you have to consider. You can't just be a whiskey nerd, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You've
yeah.
been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
Almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And you can't just – make a good product. You have to consider all these things
every
that
aspect,
have,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
it's same thing with politics.
Yeah.
You can't just be a good guy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you've got to be mindful of the
yeah.
the consumer. Are you guys using synthetics or is this a cork?
No,
cork?
This is a natural cork.
Yeah,
yeah.
Natural cork.
Yeah. Natural cork.
I actually don't have, I know there's a whole movement for screw tops, but
yeah.
I like both synthetic and,
yeah.
and natural corks. I have no
yeah. I think there's something about the pop, you know. The
of
thing
course, sure.
When you open a bottle.
We've done this on the show
yeah.
where we'll
yeah.
we'll pop it open right
yeah.
there on the mic.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah. So, what you're drinking is the Isla Barley 2011.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if you know, but, you know, we're we've been running a program where we're buying we're growing as much barley as we can on the island. So we now are up to about 40% of our barley is grown locally on Isla. We have about today in 2018 we have 19 farms growing barley for us on the island. And
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
yep.
what's the I think the standard for most of the islands much less, correct? I think.
Yeah, well, it's not common. I mean, ourselves and Kilhoman are the only two that are growing barley actively on island for
I'm a
month.
Big Kilhoman
yep.
fan
yep.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Gary Clark's
yep.
the local guy.
Yeah,
huge fan of Kilhoman.
Yeah, no, they're doing good stuff, and yeah, we've we have huge respect because they're growing barley on Islay, but they're doing it in the right way. You know, they're focusing on local and provenance, and doing it in a way. So yeah, we have 19 farms working with us as partners. They're growing different varieties of barley on Islay. We have some on the coast, so we their fields are literally like a stone throw away from the sea. So that also helps with that maritime influence because the soil is very sandy and salty, being so close to the sea. And some of the farms are more inland, they're in richer soil, which is more like clay and earthy. And for us, it's an exploration of studying like these farms in a small island of Islay and actually seeing the nuances, the difference of the soil types. And each year we see variations in the weather and that imparts on the flavour as well. So the program we've been doing right back since 2003, where we started, 2004, we started growing barley on Islay. And we started with one farm, and as I say, today we're up at 19. And each year we select whiskey from different farms, and we create a single vintage, but multi-farm, because the quantities of the barley that we're getting from each farm doesn't allow us to do single estate at this time. So we're really working on multiple farms. So we blend the whiskey together. And in this particular one, we've got three farms from Islay that have grown barley.
So this has actually got an age statement on it, but it's...
Yeah, it's a vintage. So we deal... It's because of the program, we do it as a vintage because it's each year, because it resonates with, like in wine, you talk about the vintages, and
sure.
we're talking about like barley as in like, we're telling the story.
The seasons and the terroir. Yeah. So each year will be different.
Yeah, that's it. So you can remember the years where, it was a good harvest or a bad harvest. And, we've seen in the last almost 14 years since we've been growing barley, we've seen, the years change and it has an effect. This year we talked about it earlier, we had a heat wave in Scotland, it was a drought, and that affected the barley. Actually, the warm spell came early.
By the way, we would call Houston, we'd call
a welcome.
we would call it a blizzard. It'd be the exact opposite. Yeah, like 70 degrees would just be incredible.
Yeah. Well, for us not to get rain for 6 weeks is unusual, and obviously have kind of sunshine like that for 6 weeks in a row is unusual. But as I say, it came early on in the growing season. And it actually sped the germination of the barley up, and then that actually meant that we were the barley was ready a bit early, which in one term wasn't bad, but it meant that when the farmers are harvesting, they're actually getting less yields, and they're actually finding that because we're having to harvest it a bit early, it still hadn't fully developed, so the nitrogen levels are a bit higher, so there's less protein, and that actually has an effect on the flavor.
Are you guys using two row?
Two row mainly. We do use six row. I think as far as I know, we're the only Scotch whiskey distillery in Scotland that is actually making whiskey with six row barley.
Yeah,
we don't know of any other distillery, and we're working. That's the beer barley that we produce.
Sure,
but mainly two row. This year we'll see. 2018 harvest will be interesting because it'll be different from 2017 because
so
the change
much more
in
sun.
Sure.
So for us, that's telling the story and trying to remember the harvests and see the variations between each one, and that's really what we're doing. We're doing it with Buchladie, we do it with Charlotte, and we actually do it with Octomore as well. So the 0.3 edition of Octomore is always barley growing an Octomore farm, and it's only ever Octomore farm.
Sure.
It goes into 0.3, so.
I actually plan to bring my Octomore bottle and completely forgot.
Yeah, okay.
So I grabbed this, but I'm a huge Octomore fan.
Yeah.
I mean, the bottle is unique, iconic in it of itself.
Yes.
Do you guys actually do any, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, any sherry bombs, any major... I can't think of anything. Everything's light and
Black Art, that would be the closest.
Well, Black Art, is probably something that's really rich, and it's not directly driven by sherry matured.
Right.
But we do have some sherry casks maturing. We have quite a lot of sherry casks in our cellars, but we tend to use the sherry as an addition when we're making up a single malt that we'll use a percentage of sherry casks in the blend. In the future, we possibly will have. There was a while where we stopped. Well, we weren't buying sherry casks because you couldn't really guarantee quality sherry casks.
Sure. There's a lot of easy ways to cut corners.
Yeah,
with
those. That's right. Yeah. And I think we had.
Not pointing any fingers.
Yeah. We had learned that we've seen a lot of shortcuts getting taken. So we decided not to, to fall into a trap and buy some inferior quality casks. So we stopped buying them. So that means, you know, when you're not filling sherry casks, then you can't obviously release a whiskey in sure. the future. So we started buying them because we set up a relationship with a bodega down in Jerez, Fernando de Castilla.
Sure.
And he's an interesting because he's producing sherry still the original way, and he's huge admiration for what we do, and we have huge respect for him, and we formed a partnership with him where, you know, we get first refusal on all his casks.
Wow.
So we buy everything that he has. So in that, he produces Pedro Jimenez, Oloroso, Fino, Manzanillo. So we'll buy his casks, and we've been laying down some stock. So in the future, we will have sherry cask releases. But at this time, you know, we don't, just because naturally we stopped filling them for a while.
You touched sure. on a point earlier today. You said that there was multiple varieties of barrels, obviously. How many were it? What?
Yeah, so since 2001, we've been very progressive. We talk about being progressive. Exploration yeah. is something yeah. that we've never been frightened to try something. And, you know, I think for us, it's, we discovered, you know, by putting whiskey into different types of barrels creates new flavors of whiskey. And that's, sure. you know, for us, for a blender, it's an amazing opportunity to go into the warehouse and you've got a huge selection. It's right. like, if
it's
you're
a good menu.
Yeah.
Like barrel A and barrel B.
Yeah. yeah. If you're a chef and you go into, you know, you've your larder and you've sure. got all these different ingredients, it's amazing. Or if you're a mixologist, the more sure. you've got to play with, the more options you have. And it's exactly the same. And, you know, for us, you know, we weren't just replicating history and saying, well, okay, we'll just fill bourbon and sherry and we'll keep doing what we can. We'll mix it up and we'll take different, you know, for us, it was going beyond that and working with all the varieties we have. And today we've got over 80,000, well, almost 80,000. We'll be by the end of the year, we'll be over 80,000 casks maturing. And in that 80,000, we've got 300 different variations, or almost just under 300 different variants of different types of oak we're working with. And for us, that's it's a playground. You know, you go in and you're seeing like between Brocladi, Porcharle, Octomore, all the different variants of wood that are given different flavors. And that helps when we're going to make if we're pulling a whiskey together that we can use, whether it's bourbon as a base, and then we'll add to it with, you know, whether it's wine, whether it's sherry, whether it's port. One of the things that's difficult for us to, and we, you know, we talk about premium French wine, or, you know, it comes from a region. A lot of the chateaus don't like us talking about their chateaus, so we can't say the name of the chateau,
sure,
or we're not allowed to market it.
What do they call them?
Disclosures.
NDA. Yeah. It's a big part of here in America as well.
Yeah.
One thing I like about Lefroy, you know, their parent company, they also own Makers, and they'll tell you a big portion of the, and that was my next question to you. A big portion of Lefroy's casks are Maker's Mark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular, even if you can't say it, then that's fine. But is there a particular American distiller that you guys pull a lot of your casks from?
Yeah. So we buy a lot of bourbon casks. Probably 90% of the casks we buy are fresh bourbon casks from the States. But we can't guarantee continuity of one distillery. So we get some Heaven Hill casks, we get Buffalo Trace.
Sure. Great cast to pull from.
We get Beam.
Brown Forman.
Yeah, we've had different varieties. We know even latterly there, we've been getting some Jack Daniels casks and such. So we do get an option, but we've, you know, in the past, we tried to work with Buffalo Trace, and it was difficult because they're empty in barrels at different times of the year, where we are filling all year round. So we need like a regular supply.
Sure.
And it's, you know, we couldn't, you know, kind of wait and then till they released, and then, you know, if they emptied so many barrels, you know, maybe not enough for us to.
I think a lot of people would be very happy or very interested to know that you guys were heavily focused in Buffalo Trace barrels.
Yeah.
And I know I had a discussion with Harlan Williams, couple months back about the amount of product they're producing, and I still haven't looked this up, but I'm going to repeat the misinformation one more time. I can't remember if it's 1,000 barrels a day or 1,000 barrels a week they're filling right now.
Yeah.
So there are so many bourbon distilleries who are amping up filling of casks to meet this demand that I don't think you're going to have a hard time in a few years pulling directly from one distillery or the other.
Yeah, sure. That's it. But it's we're talking about this earlier today, actually. It's filling them was one thing. It's emptying them, so they need to have a market to empty them. And I think that's where it becomes, because they're laying down lots of stock. And I'm not saying, you know, they're not emptying barrels. They are emptying them. But when we try to work with Buffalo Trace in the past to get, you know, 100% supply from them, was that we were getting barrels, you know, as and when they had them.
Sure.
And as you say, we were then in the middle. We were having to
your demand outfilled their need.
Well, yeah, it was just because we were filling regular, and then they would only empty every so often.
Sure.
So basically, on their demand. And I was explaining, like, sherry's a perfect example of that. Is that because the consumption of sherry is on the decline, there's not many people drinking. There's not demand for sherry. So, you know, you find that there's you know, companies now, they're aging sherry, but they don't
just
have a market.
For bourbon. Yeah.
So you don't have a market for it. So they're trying to use it. They're aging the sherry, but just to get the casks at the end of it to cater for the whiskey industry. So,
which is going
to
jump the price up substantially.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we've seen a big increase. But as I say, we're lucky. We've got a partnership with Jan Peterson, and that allows us to, you know, he's aging his sherry, and then when he's done with the cask, he lets us know. So we're not too reliant on sherry casks, but we are reliant on bourbon casks. So that's why we'll work with multiple bourbon suppliers.
But you hit all the trigger words.
Yeah.
I mean, Heaven Hill, Buffalo Trace, these are like the people at the forefront of the bourbon boom right now.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's funny. I would argue that most Scotch drinkers, at least in this market, are also bourbon drinkers.
Yeah.
But most bourbon drinkers are not Scotch drinkers.
That's right, yeah.
And I think that there are a lot of easy crossovers in the sherry matured or sherry finished. I always try to introduce people to Glenmorangie, Quinta Rubin, or the Kilhoman line, even if you like a little bit of smoke. But Glenfiddich has the Bourbon Barrel Reserve, and there's so much out there. It's such an exciting time to be a nerd in this. I mean, you guys, Brooklady is doing really well. I mean, I used to do a lot with Michelle Fedor, which I think she moved on. Mm-hmm. And you guys are at progressive. You guys are right there.
Yeah, and I think that we're very transparent. We want to educate the people that are drinking our single malt. We want to be able to tell them, you know.
We're good smellers.
Yeah. We want to.
Put it up to the microphone.
Yeah. We want to tell people, you know, everything, all the detail, whether it's from the barley right through to the casks we use, the aging process, the distillation, how we make things. Everything, you know, is we're an open book, you know.
Yeah, if you go to the website, there's plenty of information. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's something that we're in this era, I think we need to be, you know, open and transparent. You know, I think there's the days of smoke and mirrors and saying there's a secret recipe of the blender and you can't tell anybody.
That's more of a bourbon tradition.
But
I love bourbon, but they've been known, and they're moving past that.
Yeah,
the whole whole Al Capone secret recipe nonsense is. And the great thing about Scotch is the story's real.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you guys have been around. When was Brooklady started?
So 1881.
Yeah, 1881.
Yeah.
What were you doing?
In 1881? Let me think back.
Where were you at?
You know, and you know, both Laphroaig and Lagavulin turned 200 in 2015, 2016.
That's right, yeah.
Just these hundreds of years of tradition. And it really is.
Yeah.
Tradition, the same. I mean, you guys are still using, I don't know if you still are, but last I checked, when I first fell in love with you guys are still using a lot of the same Victorian era equipment that you guys had years past before you guys reopened.
Yeah, absolutely. We have, when it's something that we've been very progressive in the way that we market our product, but I think the way that we produce our product, we've been very respectful of tradition, and that's something that we see ourselves as very unique. And it's not just to be unique, we're doing it. It's actually because we believe it's the right way to be making whiskey, is that using that Victorian equipment, we've actually rejected any automation or changing the process to implement, you know, if we could make the process more efficient by changing the mash tun or, you know, adding a new mill just to save a few pounds. It's, you know, it's something we've rejected to do. We've, yeah. well, we've refrained from doing it. Trying to retain all that Victorian equipment is something that means a lot to us. You know, we're still working with the original equipment, making whiskey in the original way, using the skill, the tradition that's handed down from generation to generation. You know, we have to learn our craft from the guys before us. There's no textbook, there's no you know, audio tape.
Whiskey
that you can
101.
Watch. Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
there's no YouTube.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And it's all about touching, feeling, smelling. You know, it's all the kind of basic things that you do. And, you know, I think in this day and age, it's automation takes over so that you start to forget basic things. But at the distillery, that's what's quite warming when you go to the distillery, is that there's people there that are actually know how what they're actually doing. They're making whiskey. They know they're watching, they're visually seeing everything, they're smelling, they're hearing just for different sounds, all these things. And, you know, that's, you know, it's great to try and keep that alive.
I think that's part of it, is we're employing, you know, Isla in doing so, you know, and not doing Victorian age equipment or anything like that. We're essentially putting people on the ground and all that kind of stuff as well, which is a beautiful part because we're giving back to the island and everything about it.
Yeah, everything about it, you know, I mentioned it's modern, right? It's 2018, but being there feels historic.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Not,
yeah.
Not even just Brokolati, but being on the island, and then when you get to, I mean, when you land at the airport on the island, yeah. it's full of scotch.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's quite an experience.
The display cases are
dated at 1881.
I mean, yes, yes. The airport definitely feels like it was also started at the same yes. time as the distillery, but even more so, just looking at what you guys are doing, it screams small town, old world.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a different world. Yeah, I think when you go on to Isla, you realize that time slows down. You know, everybody's.
Are you allowed to smoke indoors?
Yeah, well, no, yeah. that's yeah.
We caught up with that.
Yeah. But the I think, you know, when you realize the pace of life on Isla, there's no rush, there's no there's no traffic lights, there's no you know, and I think people have still got time to stop and talk and, you know, have, you know, conversation, and you know, that's what makes Isla quite a special place. You know, that's why I've lived there all my life. I don't think I've ever had the urge to move away or felt that, you know, sure. I've had enough of this, you know, I want to leave. I think the population of Isla is 3,000 people.
3,000?
3,000 people.
Wow. And 36,000 sheep, though.
Yeah, that's it. Lots of sheep, yeah.
If we weren't distilling, we'd be a petting zoo, essentially.
Yeah. That's one thing I love about the distilleries there, is I got to pick up so many great scarves.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All from wool mills on the island. Yeah. Yep. And it was just awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a great respect for, like, local produce and, you know, working in, like, you know, with, you know, the woolen mill who are, you know, using the wool from the local sheep, and they're creating scarves and merchandise for the distilleries. And it's great, you know, the visitors we get from all over the world. You know, we're very grateful that the efforts that people will make to come from all corners of the world to come to visit Isla, it's incredible. You know, it's heartwarming to see, and you know, it's great that they can be rewarded with little kind of gifts that they can take back.
Mm-hmm. Do they have any kind of idea or metric on how many people visit during the Fishila festival? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, Fishila.
Man, I was so dead set on pronouncing everything right this episode.
Yeah,
Fishila.
Yeah. So the Fish runs at the end of May every year. It's our annual whiskey festival.
Sure.
Each distillery has its own day. And, you know, we joke locally about, you know, one of these days the island's going to, like, cope over because there's that many people come on.
Sinking,
you know,
you're
going to sink. It's known to almost double, or, you know, and, you know, we have our open day. We get between 2,500 to 3,000 visitors on the day. On one day.
The entire island's population. Essentially, in numbers, doubles for that one day.
Yeah, well, and for the week,
For those who don't know, it's a jazz festival on the island that happens where, you know, I believe there are 8 distilleries.
Yep,
8 soon distilleries
nine,
on the island.
Soon to be 9.
And then even after that, there's a couple more coming. But every day of that week, you just hop around festival. It's like a bar crawl, a pub crawl.
Yeah.
But you just spend the day, and then each distillery does special releases for the event. And we went in the fall.
Yeah.
And I'm committed for our next trip when we go to be during Fashila.
Yeah,
because it was just incredible. Yeah.
Well, it's not just jazz. I mean, it's what they call the Festival of Music and Malt. And so we bring over bands, live bands, and they'll play. And that could be Scottish music, folk music, to jazz, to different bands that will play music. And the distilleries put on different events during the day, tastings and educational tastings. And, you know, we just really have a big party on the Sunday. It's our open day, and we invite some locals along. We have cocktails going. There's we bring in maybe three or four different bands, and they're playing live music, and there's Highland dancing, there's local artists that will come and sing. And yeah, it's really it's a party, but it's a celebration as well of, you know, for, you know, to celebrate all the people that have come, you know, to the island to have a bit of a good day, and, you know, have a bit of a party. And yeah, it's a great experience. You know, and people will come from all over the world to that festival. You know, we get people from all nationalities.
Yeah, it's absolutely. When we went to Port Ellen, we stopped at Lagavulin, and Ian MacArthur.
Yeah.
He pulled out a bottling from the year, because I know that that. Speaking of the secondary market, one of the big things that happens is during that festival, all those bottles, a ton of them show up on those secondary markets, right? The auction houses and stuff. And it's one thing. We ended up grabbing a bottle of the Lagavulin one year, I think 2016. But it's one of those things that I've touched every part of it except actually being there during it. So it's definitely the ultimate goal if you're an Isla fan to go visit during Fashila. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, I got it that time.
Put it on the calendars, guys.
Have we gone over for a break? Or?
Yeah. Well, we went over for the break. He just said, keep going. Yeah. We'll just keep going. We'll leave this part in too. So we're very professional here.
Yeah.
People love it. Just the great thing about podcasts nowadays is just people love an honest conversation.
Yeah, sure.
You know, not just the local
cut.
News cut, you know, the fake hair, veneer teeth, you know.
Yeah, well, it's exactly the same as the whiskey. You know, we are authentic, and we want to be authentic. You know, that's why we're being real. And, you know, it's, you know, rather than trying to cut it and be an image of something you're not, I think it's really it's important just to
there's a reason why you know, podcasts nowadays are going through the golden era of podcast. I mean, if you listen, Joe Rogan sees something like 15 million a month in all of his episodes, and it's something that people prefer. It's like when cable came out, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't say, and see, I could say shit right now.
Yeah.
When back in the day, you couldn't cuss on regular TV.
Yeah.
And then when cable came out, people were like, cable's great.
Yeah.
You know, MTV, right?
Yeah.
The whole podcast realm, being able to just have an honest conversation. I've had Fred Noe from Beam here.
Sure.
We've had all kinds of people. Glenn Morangy will be here next week.
Yeah.
So and my first love being Scotch.
You're having a good week.
I'm having a week
and a good week and a half.
Having a very good. Well, you know, the great thing about WOW, right?
Yeah.
So what happens next week? Whiskeys of the World will be here in Houston, and it's a similar festival to what I throw the Houston Whiskey Social, but everyone's in town, so everyone's like, "Hey, can we get on the show?" I'm like, "Yes, please." Like a big thing that's going through a very popular phase right now is Indian whiskey.
Okay, yeah.
And Amroot will be on the show next year,
next
month, or next week. So I'm super excited to have Amroot on.
Great.
And then Glenmorangie. I mean, what's not to love about Glenmorangie?
Yeah.
So
great whiskeys,
So give me the super secret next special release that you haven't told anybody about yet.
We've always got lots of things up our sleeve.
Talk about grain.
Yeah, so I was actually just contemplating telling you about a project we're working on.
Is it called Brookladdie Grain?
No, well, we're
maybe.
Hoping it's not going to be.
Yeah, you're fighting against it. Yeah,
yeah. So we last year. It started the year before. We were looking at, you know, we're always being creative with barley and different strains of barley and different things. And to say growing at an Isla, it's got to be something that's connected to the land and the place. And for us, we thought, you know, what can we do that's different? And we thought, well, you know, Americans are making great single malt and they're using barley, and, you know, they're making it in Japan. So
why can't we do something else?
So we thought, well, we'll do what they do in America. We'll make rye whiskey. So
so
we grew some rye on Islay last year.
It's big.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's really big. Yeah. I don't know of any Scotch producer just producing a rye.
Yeah, well, coincidentally, so we done it. We worked with one of the local farmers that grows barley for us, we got some seeds and we got him to grow it, and we kept it quite low key because we didn't want to get excite anybody that, because we knew that it was going to be a first.
It's going to be a very big first.
We didn't know that,
because rye is going through a bit of a resurgence now in the States as well.
Yeah,
bourbon's huge. But during Prohibition, rye was the thing, right?
Yeah.
Because before bourbon really got defined by law, you can snake oil salesmen will put all kinds of mess in there. Did you get that? Yep. Sorry. Rye was like the thing, and some old. There's a local guy, a few local guys that have a really great collection of Prohibition era rye that is just phenomenal. Old Hoverholt from 1915, I've had a few from 1930, was just great whiskey.
Yeah,
I mean whiskey incarnate.
Yeah.
So nowadays, you know, Kentucky Owl Rye and all these different Russell's Reserve Rye is some of the best rye in America that you can get. And it's definitely making a comeback. So to hear that a Scottish producer.
So I was going to say, it was coincidentally that on the week that we mashed and distilled the rye, there was another distillery on the East Coast. It's a new distillery, Inchdairn. They've just started up. And they actually made a couple of mashes with rye as well the same week.
Not out yet, right?
Yeah, so it's not been released. And either as ours is almost just a year old now at the moment. It's still aging. We distilled it, super excited that we done it, certainly for the first time in Islay, that, you know, growing rye, and for us it was a first to create a new spirit in the same distillery again with just a different cereal. So we filled the spirit into a combination of, we've got some virgin American oak that we filled into with a medium and a high toast. And then we've actually taken some French virgin oak and we filled it into that as well, just to see the limousine oak.
The difference.
Yeah, with high toast. And then we filled some into fresh bourbon casks again. And we'll just watch it age and see how it goes. But, I mean, the results under a year is incredible. They're you know, it's amazing liquid. We're super excited about that. So, yeah, we'll see how it progresses and, you know, see where the market, if it takes it off into the market. Yeah, we're quite excited about it.
So what's the goal? Are we talking 4 or 5 years from now?
Who knows? You know, I think we'll let the liquid decide when it's ready. It's ready, and I think, and you know, we're excited. It's shaping up to be pretty good, so early on, because you know the progression in it's having in new oak is quite intense. So we're seeing the influence from the cask is quite rapid. But we'll see. You know, we'll watch and see what happens.
Sure. The Fistful of Bourbon, Glenfiddich, William Grant just released their blend of American bourbon aged here. So the idea of a Scottish producer growing rye there?
Yeah, it'd be great on Islay. And we mashed it and we distilled it all at the distillery.
All done there aged in American oak.
Yeah.
So it's a real ode to American whiskey.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, we're super excited about that. When you talked about, you know, will it be Bruichladdich Grain? We've had lots of ideas or suggestions for names, you know, the people saying Ryla and all sorts of things.
But Ryla.
We've not got to that stage yet. But one thing that we want to kind of challenge, because at the moment, if you make a single malt whiskey, you've got to use malted barley and the Scotch whiskey.
That's defined.
Defined.
Rye's not defined.
No, rye isn't. So you can't call it single dry or, so at the moment, the regulations would stipulate that you would call it single grain.
I'm sorry. Just so I understand, you can't call it something that hasn't been defined.
Well, the regulations say if you use any other cereal rather than malted barley, it falls all into this big one category of single grain.
Sure.
So, I mean, we feel that it's quite boring because it's it's not actually defining the cereal you're using.
You're using Cheerios. Yeah, it's fine. We know.
Yeah,
So
it's something that over the next few years we want to kind of challenge and, you know, see if we can get that rule overturned because, it's not, we're not just making it for for, we're not making a grain whiskey that's going to go into a blend. We're making it because we want to bring it to the market.
Correct. As, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, we'll see how that goes, but that'll be a fight we'll have for the next few years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We are out of time. That was all four. Yeah. That was perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah.
Thank you
so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Cheers, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks,
cheers.
Guys.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Ding, ding,
ding, ding. Saldra.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.